Here's an experiment for you. Take passionate experts in human resource technology. Invite cross-industry experts from inside and outside HR. Mix in what's happening in people analytics today. Give them the technology to connect. Hit record. Pour their discussions into a beaker. Mix thoroughly, and voila, you get the HR Data Labs podcast, where we explore the impact of data and analytics to your business. We may get passionate and even irreverent, but count on each episode challenging and enhancing your understanding of the way people data can be used to solve real-world problems. Now, here's your host, David Turetsky.
Hello and welcome to the HR Data Labs podcast. I'm your host, David Turetsky, alongside my friend, trusted colleague, Salary.com's own Dwight Brown. Dwight, how are you?
I'm doing well, David. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's snowing a lot outside today. They've closed down Franklin, Massachusetts for the 3.5 inches of snow that we have right now. Which,
oh my goodness,
you know, it's not that much. Anyways, today we have with us a best-selling author, Jacob Morgan. Jacob, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. So, Jacob, why don't you give us a little bit of your background and all of those best-selling books? You have, five books?
Yes, sir. Five books. Recent one just came out a few months ago now, called Leading with Vulnerability. And so we can talk a little bit about that as well.
Sure.
But basically, I got involved in everything that I'm doing because I had bad jobs working for other people. And so around 15, 16 years ago, I went off on my own, started writing, speaking, doing all sorts of fun stuff. And now here we are.
Well, so everybody wants to be their own boss, but having been one, it's not as easy as people think.
No. No, it's not. Now, if it was that easy, everybody would do it.
Well, everybody tries, right?
There's certainly pros and cons to everything and anything that you do. I've been very fortunate and I've enjoyed being my own boss, but of course, I mean, you work like crazy, right? I mean, it's lots of challenges that come your way. I was fortunate to start off, go off on my own when I didn't have kids. I didn't have a mortgage. I didn't have a car payment. I was single. My expenses were low. So that certainly helped. If I were in the position I'm in now where I'm married, I have two kids, a mortgage and all that sort of stuff. If I had to go off on my own, it probably would have been much harder to do now than it was 15, 16 years ago.
Complications.
Yes. Yes. That's a nice way to put that. Complications.
The best complications possible.
Exactly. Yeah.
So one of the things we love to do, Jacob, is to ask each of our guests one fun thing that no one knows about them. What's your one fun thing?
Oh my goodness. I play competitive chess and racquetball. That's probably something a lot of people don't know. Wow. Yeah.
But not at the same time, though, right?
Not at the same time. That would be pretty impressive if I could do both at the same time.
That'd be very impressive.
Yeah. And I'm really into fitness, health, so exercise all the time, eat healthy. So I'm really into that whole space.
So the fact that I have ramen and pizza for lunch, that does not impress you at all then?
Oh, man, ramen and pizza, just hearing those two things together, just I had like shivers going down my spine.
Well, it's going to be shivers going down my belly in a little bit because that's lunch
sure
today.
Delicious.
No, well, you know, it's what you got to do. I'm, you know, kind of running out of time today. So there you go.
You got to do what you got to do.
So the really cool thing that we're going to be talking to you about today, the topic is leading with vulnerability, which is really about bringing together competence and connection. And this is one of the really cool things in HR is people having a really good EQ, I guess, right?
Yep.
So that'll be a really interesting thing to explore. So let's talk about this in a way that might make sense to people and bring it a little bit home. What's the difference between being vulnerable and leading with vulnerability?
Vulnerability is, I think, something we are all familiar with. We've talked about it for years. Brené Brown was one of the pioneers in doing research in that space and making the phrase, the word vulnerability commonplace, something that we've talked about in our personal and professional lives. Simply put, when we think about vulnerability, you can broadly think of it as doing or saying something that exposes you to the potential of emotional harm. Now, in your personal life, it's very clear why vulnerability is relevant and why it's important, because it creates trust and a connection and it builds relationships with friends, with family members, with your spouses, people who are close to you. But inside of our organizations, we have a very different dynamic. Inside of an organization, you have a boss, you have employees who work for you, you have customers, you have projects, you have deadlines, you have a salary, you have people who are depending on you and people who you are dependent on. Now, in that kind of environment, simply just doing or saying something frequently that exposes you to the potential of emotional harm is actually not going to serve you very well. In fact, purely being vulnerable at work can actually hurt you far more than it can help you. And so think about vulnerability as this idea of exposing a gap that you have. It could be a gap in competence, a gap in knowledge, a gap in experience, a gap in emotion, a gap in whatever it is. Now, again, in your personal life, it's very clear why that's useful and why that's important. But in your professional life, do you just want to show up every day talking about the gaps that you have? That's really what vulnerability is and what it's about. Leading with vulnerability, on the other hand, is about talking about the gaps that you have and then demonstrating what you're trying to do to close those gaps. So for example, if you work on a team with somebody, or let's say somebody works on your team, and they come to you and they say, hey, I'm really sorry, I made a mistake. That's very vulnerable, right? They're exposing themselves to the potential of emotional harm. They're admitting to something that's uncomfortable, that's maybe a little bit embarrassing, something that questions their competence and their value to the team or to the organization. However, if somebody just comes to you and says, hey, I'm really sorry, I made a mistake, I don't know what happened, you as a leader are not going to look at that employee and say, oh, gee, thank you so much for telling me. You as a leader are going to look at your employee and say, great, thanks for telling me, now what?
Right. Did you fix it?
Right. Exactly. How are you going to find out what went wrong?
Yeah. The customer is still unhappy. The problem is still there. The product still hasn't been finished. And so you don't just want your employees to come to you and say, oh, I'm so sorry I did that. You want your employees to say, hey, here's what I'm going to do to fix it. So leading with vulnerability would be taking that same scenario and saying, hey, I'm really sorry I made a mistake, but here's what I learned from that mistake. And here are three things that I'm going to do to make sure that that mistake never happens again. So in other words, it's taking that accountability, that agency, that control that you are learning and growing and improving and trying to get better. And too often inside of our organizations, we've been very focused on the emotional intelligence piece, which granted is important. But I feel like over the past few years, we've been forgetting that competence, that leadership, that being good at your job, that work ethic, that occasional sacrifice, that being able to tell people to work hard, we're forgetting about that. And that is still very important. It's not just about how your employees are feeling, but you also want to make sure that they are doing a great job. And saying that has almost become taboo in a lot of organizations. I mean, can you imagine a lot of leaders now saying, hey, you know, this job, this role is going to take occasional sacrifices from you. Sometimes you might have to stay late. Sometimes you might have to wake up early. Sometimes you might have to put in a few extra hours. Sometimes you're going to have to do a job or a role that you don't want to do. Today, you tell employees that and they say, oh my God.
Well, they might leave over that, right? They might see that as being a challenge or a threat to them in a certain way.
Yeah. And you know what? That's okay. It should be a challenge. It should be something that pushes you. It should be something that makes you uncomfortable. Now, again, part of this also depends on your personal expectations and your aspirations of yourself. If you are an employee who's comfortable being mediocre, you have no aspirations of growing, of developing, of being a leader, of getting into a senior or executive level roles, and you just want to stay where you are for the rest of your life, that's fine. Go find a job where you're not pushed, where you're not challenged, where you can just work 30 hours a week, when you can just coast and not have to worry about anything. But for most people in the world, that is not something that they want. They aspire to these roles. They want to make an impact. They want to make a difference. They want to get into those leadership positions. And guess what? That's going to take time and effort. I interviewed Frank Blake. He's the former CEO of the Home Depot. And he told me that one of the things that people don't understand about leadership is that leaders always do more and they care more. And so we need employees to understand that if they have aspirations of growth and development, they have to do more and they have to care more. So broadly speaking, those two differences between vulnerability and leading with vulnerability. Vulnerability is about exposing a gap. Leading with vulnerability is about exposing a gap and demonstrating what you're trying to do to close that gap.
In terms of the revealing that gap, some might say, hey, do I need to sing it from the mountaintops? Or is it okay to go through that with one individual, my boss, for example?
Yeah, I never recommend somebody to just in an all hands meeting, raise their hand and say, I screwed up today, or, you know, post on your internal collaboration platform, I'm an idiot, I can't believe I failed. Not advisable. I mean, context matters, right? And so only you are going to know who you need to be speaking with. If it's a leader, talk to your leader. If it's a team, talk to your team. But again, the big mistake, and we see this all the time with new leaders as well, when a new leader gets promoted either for a leadership role for the first time, or when they get promoted into an executive role for the first time, a senior leadership role, and they're told, hey, you know, why don't you say a few words to your team? And one of the things that first-time leaders always say is they'll get in front of their all hands, their team, and they'll say, hey, you know, I'm so excited to be here. I've never been in this position before, but I know I'm going to make a positive impact. We're going to do some amazing things together. I'm really looking forward to working with all of you. Now, on the surface, that doesn't sound like a terrible message, but it doesn't convey any kind of competence. It doesn't convey any kind of leadership. And so what can you do instead? Again, let's say you're a first-time leader. You've never done this before. When you are addressing your team, you can start off with that same level of vulnerability. Hey, I've never done this before. I'm excited to be a first-time leader. To help make sure I'm the best leader that you've ever had, here are three things that I'm going to do. Number one is I'm getting coaching and mentoring from our SVP of marketing, who's been at this company for 10 years. She's going to be checking in with me every week. We're going to be meeting for 30 to 60 minutes so that she can give me some guidance on how I'm leading the team and how I'm progressing. I've also been working with an executive coach. This executive coach is going to be interviewing you and talking to you to make sure that I'm moving in the right direction. And here are 3 to 5 leadership books that I'm committed to reading over the next month. And I encourage you to grab a copy of this book as well so that you can follow along with my progress and my leadership journey. And my door is always open. Give me feedback so that I can be the best leader that you've ever had. Now, again, I'm vulnerable in that situation. I'm acknowledging and admitting that I've never done this, but I'm also demonstrating competence. I'm demonstrating what I'm trying to do to close the gap. I have a coach. I'm being mentored by an executive at the company. I'm committing my time to reading these leadership books. So now if you work for me and I'm a first-time leader, you're not going to say, nah, I don't know about this Jacob person. He's never done this before. I don't really know. Now you're going to say, hey, you know what? I know Jacob has never done this before, but man, this guy seems serious about being a great leader. Look at all these things that he's doing. I'm actually very happy working for this kind of a person. That's a very, very different message and a very different way to position yourself inside the company.
Sure, Jacob, but that takes investment for both the company as well as that person and needs to be part of their individual development plan, especially not only after they've taken the job, but potentially even before they've taken that job so that they know that they have those things behind them and next to them and for their development. Is that really part of most companies' development plans to be able to provide that kind of assistance? Or is that something that someone should actually be proactive about if they are taking that kind of a role?
I think a lot of organizations do a fairly good job of providing those types of programs. But let's say you're part of an organization that doesn't have that. In fact, I found that most people, when they get put into leadership roles, they don't actually have any kind of formal leadership training. And so if you don't have any formal leadership training, then you need to be proactive and take advantage of a couple things yourself. So number one is you can ask an executive to coach you and mentor you or to give you advice. That's free. You can spend time reading books, listening to podcasts, even taking courses. Most of that is pretty much free. Chances are your organization has a leadership development program that maybe you just don't know about. So ask to participate in that. That for you is likely also going to be free. You can meet with peers. You can meet with leaders in other companies and other teams and other departments. There's nothing stopping you from developing as a leader if you don't have that formal leadership training. In fact, a lot of the CEOs that I've interviewed for the book, for example, the CEO of 1-800-Flowers, Jim McCann, he never received any kind of formal leadership training. He learned how to lead based on the people that he surrounded himself with. And so you, if you aspire to be in a leadership role, surround yourself with leaders, surround yourself with people who you emulate, who you want to be like. And this gets into the whole debate, which we can talk about if you want, working in the office versus working from home, because I have a lot of strong opinions on that as well. Again, depending on if you aspire to be in that leadership role or not.
Well, we'll get to that. But first, let's ask the next question, because I think it's important for this.
Like what you hear so far? Make sure you never miss a show by clicking subscribe. This podcast is made possible by Salary.com. Now, back to the show.
Why do most people not lead with vulnerability at work?
Yeah, we asked 14,000 employees this question, and we said, why are you scared of leading with vulnerability inside your organization? And not surprisingly, the number one response that came back is, I don't want to be perceived as being weak or incompetent. Right? I mean, I don't want to expose myself and share any gaps that I have, because I don't want people to think that I don't belong here, that I'm not good at my job. And so the way that you change that perception is pretty much what we've been talking about, is you add competence to the vulnerability. So yeah, don't just say, I made a mistake. Don't just say, I don't know how to do this. Don't just say, I need help. Don't just say, I'm unsure of what the next step is. Don't just keep exposing the gap that you have, but add competence, add that level of leadership to all of those different types of situations and scenarios when you feel vulnerable. So for example, if somebody on my team asks me for help, I'll say, hey, I'm happy to help you, but what are you going to do going forward to make sure that you can figure this out yourself? Right? If somebody says, hey, Jacob, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. I say, I appreciate you telling me. What are you going to do to make sure this doesn't happen again in the future? If you have a friend in your personal life who says, hey, I'm trying to lose weight, or I'm trying to stop smoking, you say, great, what are you doing about it? Right? So it all comes down to this idea of taking responsibility and accountability over your personal and your professional growth, right? That is absolutely crucial. And that's what this whole theme of leading with vulnerability is about. And so that's nonstop what I tell employees. You have to combine leadership with vulnerability, competence with connection. You cannot just have one.
A lot of times we'll see the Peter principle come into effect when people get promoted, right? They get promoted to their highest level of dysfunction, right? So somebody might be really great at building widgets, but they're not great at leading.
Yep.
And so they get promoted to a new role where they might actually have this leadership as, you know, one of their potential, you know, skills that they need to grow. It's in that case, it may not be as easy as just getting training. And while they may have competence in all the other areas of their company, and that's really served them well, what do they do to kind of make sure that that's something that they can achieve? Or do people sometimes have to be much more mature about this and sometimes say, yeah, I don't know if this is good for me. Maybe I should be in that other role instead.
Oh, absolutely. There are many scenarios. And I used to work, this was many, many years ago, but I interned at Morgan Stanley way, way back in the day. I don't even remember. Maybe I was 18 or 19 years old. And at the time when I was working at Morgan Stanley for the summer, I noticed that all the people who were getting promoted to leadership roles, to being like a VP or an SVP, had nothing to do with their ability to lead other people. These were some of the biggest jackasses, rudest, just unpleasant people.
But I used to work there too, and I got promoted there. So you're probably talking about me.
Uh-oh.
It's okay. I own it.
Yeah. But they got promoted into their leadership roles because they were bringing in a lot of deals. Right. So if you were managing X amount, millions of dollars, you were a VP or an SVP. Had nothing to do with your ability to lead anybody else. And I was working and interning, I think it was for an SVP there. And man, this guy was just, I don't want to get into the details, but he was just rude and unpleasant, had no social skills, no emotional intelligence. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, how the hell are you an SVP at this organization simply because you brought in a lot of money? And this is very common inside of organizations around the world, right? And so the big challenge here is, I mean, very rarely are you going to see somebody in that position say, hey, you know what? I know you want me to be SVP here, but no, thank you. Like, I acknowledge I don't have these skills and I'm just going to turn down this massive raise and the partnership opportunity. Leaders are very rarely ever going to do that. And so the big challenge there and what we need to do is to focus on defining what leadership means. What does it mean to be a great leader inside of your organization? And identify what are those filters? What are those values? What are those qualities and attributes and mindsets and skills? And make sure that those are the types of people that you're promoting. And one of the things that I'm always fascinated by is I would go inside of an organization. I've been inside hundreds, if not thousands of them at this point. And I would see that in the same company, with the same corporate values, with the same principles, with the same mission and vision statement, there would be some leaders that everybody loves, admires, and respects, and other leaders in that same company that everybody's scared of and hates and fears. Now, how is it that the same company, same culture, same values, two different types of leaders, one that everybody loves, one that everybody hates? It's because the people who promoted them have different definitions of what leadership is. And so this is why at an organizational level, and one of the things that HR can really step in to do is to define, what does it mean to be a leader at our company? What are the values that we're looking for and the qualities and the attributes, and only promote people that have those things? And even if you bring in a lot of money to the business, if you don't have that coaching and mentorship mindset, if you don't have the mindset where you put people first and where you take care of those that are around you, even though you bring in a lot of money, hey, you know what? We'll take care of you as an individual contributor. You'll get a bonus. You'll get all those different types of things, but you will not be put into a position where you're leading other people unless you can demonstrate that you have these qualities. And that needs to be the way that we promote.
Jacob, let's talk about that a second, because that's really important. We do a lot of work with companies to create career frameworks where we have leveling guides, and the leveling guides have significant criteria attached to each level. Now, many companies do a really good job of separating individual contributor tracks from managerial and executive tracks, and they allow for levels to creep up into the executive levels, but really never all the way up, you know? And I've experienced other companies, and Dwight, I think we've worked on projects where we've seen other companies that do have individual contributor levels almost at the executive committee level, that high, while they have influence over the entire organization. To your point, they don't have those leadership skills, and so therefore they're not in people management positions, they're in thought leadership positions, and they're allowed to flourish and be able to get those rewards that are necessary, monetary as well as leadership in an industry, and be seen as that leader in the industry without actually having to have that quote-unquote leader and have that those skills, because they don't. Typically, these are people who are brilliant, but to your point before, they're jerks. I've kind of been that in an organization. And so because, you know, you didn't have that capability, you had to be in that individual contributor track. Why don't most companies have that?
I think for a few reasons. Number one, it doesn't go with how we've typically structured companies, right? I mean, our idea of a company is you have a hierarchy and you climb the corporate ladder. And so the assumption is, if you're no longer climbing that ladder, if you're not getting promoted into those leadership roles, then you're not climbing that corporate hierarchy and you're not good at your job and you are not a high performer. And so I think we need to separate this idea of being a high performer from being somebody who's quote unquote climbing that ladder and being responsible for others. You can be an amazing individual contributor, but be a really bad leader. And so we need to separate those two things. Just because you're a great performer doesn't mean you're a great leader. That's first of all. Second, I think we need to change the way that we promote people, because right now what we do is we focus on people who bring in the most amount of money to the business and we promote them. Instead, and I'm not saying that that's not important. Obviously, you want somebody, especially in sales, who's able to bring in a lot of money to the business. But that shouldn't be the only criteria and the only metric that we'd look at. So we should be looking at those other skills, those other qualities and attributes as well. I think a third reason, we're scared of losing top talent. If you have somebody who's performing very well on an individual level, you don't want them to leave to one of your competitors. And so what do? You say, and stay here. We're gonna promote you. Yeah, you're gonna lead the whole team now of 5 of 20 people. And we forget that even an individual contributor, if you put them in charge of a team of 10 people and they're not a great leader, what you've just done is sabotage your team. And the value of that individual contributor is now being eclipsed by the poor performance of the team that individual contributor is now leading, because they do not have the ability, the skills, and the qualities to lead effectively. So it seems like a good short-term solution because you kept that employee, but you've also hurt the broader team and the organization in the long run, because the team as a whole is now performing worse. And not only that, but that individual contributor is now no longer an individual contributor. They're not doing the job that they were so good at. They're now leading other people who are doing that job. So you've shot yourself in the foot twice, because that top performer is no longer doing that task that made them a top performer. And now you have somebody who doesn't know how to lead sabotaging the team. And so you're hurting the team and the individual performer. And now everything is going to go down at the same level. And a lot of teams and a lot of organizations and a lot of leaders simply don't realize that. They just think in terms of, so-and-so is still working here. We were able to keep them. And that's not the right approach.
That makes total sense. Essentially, you're polluting the pond.
Yeah.
Trying to keep that one fish, but you're polluting the pond.
Yep, exactly.
So, Jacob, one of the things I was going to say is performance management systems aren't doing a great job of capturing that either. they may be capturing certain goals, they may be capturing certain metrics, but they're definitely not, unless they're capturing values, they're not filtering that out.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And I like the, Dwight said what I was trying to say in about like five words, polluting the pond, right? One apple that ruins the entire batch.
That's a good quote, Dwight. Yeah.
Now that we were talking, I think one other reason that came to mind is just fear, right? We are scared to rock the boat. We're scared to do things differently. We are. And so one of the things that I've been thinking about that I haven't shared is this idea of an establishment versus an anti-establishment leader inside of an organization. So we've been very obsessed with this idea of establishment leaders, leaders who are always maintaining the status quo, doing things the way that they've always been done, not thinking differently. And we need more anti-establishment leaders who are going to come into a business and challenge convention and ask questions. We're so scared to, right? We're always worried that we have to put out fires, but sometimes we need leaders who are going to be the ones to start those fires and say, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. And we need more people like that, the anti-establishment, the anti-traditional leadership stereotype approach to just kind of break things and figure out new ways of getting things done.
Absolutely. Well, a lot of times those people don't get promoted. They get mitigated or minimized because they're troublemakers.
Yep, exactly. And we need more of them.
I agree. Hey, are you listening to this and thinking to yourself, man, I wish I could talk to David about this? Well, you're in luck. We have a special offer for listeners of the HR Data Labs podcast, a free half-hour call with me about any of the topics we cover on the podcast or whatever is on your mind. Go to salary.com/HRDL consulting to schedule your free 30-minute call today. Jacob, let's go to the last question, which is, can you tell us the difference between what it's like to have vulnerability at work and vulnerability in our personal lives? Can you give us examples and how do you start leading with vulnerability?
Yeah, I mean, the difference is kind of what we talked about at the beginning, right? I mean, if I go to my wife, for example, and I say, hey, you know what? I had a really bad day. Or, you know, I did a speech or I did X, Y, Z, and I really didn't think it went well. I didn't feel like I performed well. I can stop there, right? I don't need to, I don't owe her anything. She doesn't owe me anything. I don't work for her. She doesn't work for me. She's not paying my bills. I'm not paying her. Like, that dynamic isn't there. It's just purely there for the relationship, for the support, for the comfort. Now, I'm not saying you can't have some of that inside of an organization, but again, inside of the company, you have a different dynamic, right? You have people who are dependent to you and on you. So if I'm an employee and I keep showing up to work every day, and let's say I do have a supportive leader, but just every day I'm showing up, you know, I'm having a hard time. I don't know how to do this. I'm not feeling great. I'm going through a tough time. Over time, if you keep doing that, eventually your leader is going to look at you and they're going to say, you know what? Maybe this isn't the best fit. Because it seems like you're having a hard time doing what you got hired to do. And we forget that the relationship between an employee and an organization is exactly that. It's a relationship. It's a mutual exchange of value. And at a certain point, if you are not demonstrating that you are providing value to the organization, to the leader that you are working with and for, then bluntly put, what use are you? What value are you bringing to the team and to the business? There are 100, 1,000 other people who are willing to step into that role to do the job that you had probably better than you're able to do it. And so at a certain point, you do need to step up to be accountable and to be responsible for what you need to do.
There's a difference between being vulnerable in the way in which you're defining it, but being your authentic self. We all know that people are being challenged by whether it's their children, their older parents, mental health issues, or whatever, and not being your authentic self means that you're not exactly being honest with the company either. And if you're having challenges, now I get balance, right? You were talking about balance. You weren't saying don't do that, don't be completely vulnerable, but also just be careful you're not exposing your whole self.
Yeah. And by the way, authenticity and vulnerability are not the same thing. Those are two separate pieces, right? Because you could look at somebody like a Jack Welch or a Steve Ballmer. They were very authentic, but they were not vulnerable. I mean, they had no problem cursing you out, throwing a chair or a computer across the room and basically looking like they wanted to punch you in the face. And they were as authentic as they get, but they were not vulnerable. But sorry, so I didn't mean to cut you off. You were getting to your point about like if you were going through a tough time or something like that, right?
Yeah, no, I think you made the point quite nicely, which is that there's a gigantic difference between being authentic and exposing something that you probably shouldn't be, or having a good balance between your vulnerability and sharing or oversharing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the very central piece of, I have this framework called a vulnerability wheel, and at the very center of that is intention. And if you do not have intention, basically understanding why is it that I want to share or do whatever it is that I want to share or do, if you don't have that intention, then it all falls apart. And yeah, there have been lots of situations where employees, where CEOs go through a tough time, and that's fine and that's okay. And it's okay to talk about that and to share those things. But I mean, even in those situations and scenarios, like I remember Shelley Archambault, she's the former CEO of PriceSmart, and I think they have around 10 or 12,000 employees. And she was telling me this story where her father recently had a stroke, and this was during the pandemic, and she still had to lead these team meetings while her father was in her house upstairs. He, you know, recently had a stroke, and she was taking care of them and also leading these team meetings. And, you know, so she had to be able to figure out a way to do both. Now, if you are going through something like that, it's okay to say, I need time. And I think one of the biggest mistakes that people make is they assume that they don't need time and they try to do both when they realistically can't, right? So somebody, maybe a family member passes away and they're back at work the next day and you're like, what the hell are you doing here? Or you're, you know, you just had a kid and 3 days later, you're back in the office. And I think that's when we get into problems where we don't understand what our boundaries are and we don't understand that we need time and we need space to get to the level that we need to get to. And that's when I think a lot of things start to crumble. So if you go through a tough time, it's okay to go to your leader and say, hey, you know what? I'm really going through a tough time. I don't think I can be the best that I can be here. I need a few days off, or I need a week to deal with my personal stuff that I'm doing. And when I get back, I'm going to be back at 100%. Having those conversations is okay. And again, what's not okay is just to show up and say, I'm going through all this difficult stuff in my life. But I'm still going to show up here and
fine. Work.
And
I'm fine.
Yeah. And your team is going to look at you and they're going
to
say,
tendency for all of us to do
it. Yeah. It's a tendency to do it. But what happens is your work suffers, your team suffers, your leaders are looking at you thinking like, what the hell are you doing here? And now what you're doing is you're just trying to use vulnerability as a way to justify your poor performance. Now what happens, you show up every day and you say, hey, I told you, you know, I'm going through this tough time and this is why my performance is low. When really what you should have done and said is said, I need time and space because I'm not going to be able to perform. I'll be back when I'm able to be at that level. And I think if you can do that, you'll be doing yourself and your team a big service.
Jacob, I've learned so much already, and we're about at 30-something minutes. Yeah. I wish we could keep doing this all day. We might ask you back to keep talking about it, if you don't mind.
Hey, I'm happy to come back and share all sorts of fun stuff.
Cool. Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate you.
Thank you for having me.
Dwight, thank you.
Thank you, and this has definitely given me a lot to chew on myself, so...
Yeah, I think we can both pull some very important examples for how we lead differently. And what we're going to do is in the show notes, we're also going to put links to your books too. So if people want to check out your books, they can certainly do that.
Yeah, that would be great. So I was going to say my email is jacob@thefutureorganization.com if anybody has any questions or they want to share any stories. Then I can also mention my Substack if people want to join there. It's greatleadership.substack.com.
There you go. Well, again, Jacob, thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Take care and stay safe.
That was the HR Data Labs podcast. If you liked the episode, please subscribe. And if you know anyone that might like to hear it, please send it their way. Thank you for joining us this week, and stay tuned for our next episode. Stay safe.